Welcome to Pick Up and Deliver, the podcast where I pick up my audio recorder when I drop my kids off at school and deliver an episode to you while I walk home. I'm Brendan Riley. Well, good morning, listeners. It is a gloomy, gloomy day here in suburban Chicago. I feel like I'm about to get rained on. It's not gonna happen, but it feels like it. If you've had days like that, the ground is wet from an earlier rain, and I'm sure we'll have more today. My semester is ended. I have boatloads of grading to do along with many other obligations, but I am done with my daily schedule, which means that the schedule for this podcast may change. At present, I'm going to use it. So if you'll pardon a moment or two of personal conversation. At present, my plan is to use this podcast to help keep me active a bit. I have been endeavoring to be a bit more healthy on my end of things, being over 40 now, trying to figure this out. I mentioned it last time, the gamification of my weight control concerns, but one of the real challenges coming up now that my classes are done is that I no longer have a work obligation to walk an hour and 20 minutes 3 days a week. And I suspect that's gonna make it harder for me to get exercise. So one of the things I'm gonna try to do is get into my workday a couple walks of, you know, the 40 minute variety. If I can do one of those every day, that would be really good. That would be a good way to keep up my energy and keep up my exercise. And I think the potential for doing this podcast would help with that. So I'm going to try to keep up my publication schedule. We'll see how it goes. Don't be too sad if things slow down a bit. I may even just stop. I'll try to do a see you later episode. If I'm going to stop, I'll try to be deliberate about it. With the idea that I would come back to it in the fall. So that's kind of where we are on the old pick up and deliver summer schedule. I hope that if you are involved in academia in any way, either as an employee or as a parent, that your spring semester, your spring trimester, your spring quarter is coming to a pleasant end and that you have a nice summer ahead of you in some way. So on to the games. Today, I am going to introduce a new segment that I'm calling Message from the Deep. You know, I have another segment I called Shooting from the Hip, which is kind of a response to a game after the first time I play it. This is going to be the opposite. This will be when I return to a game that I've played a number of times, enough that I feel like I can comment on it in a robust way. Then I feel like I've done a deep dive of the game, to use the common parlance for careful consideration. And what I want to do then is talk a bit specifically about the things that most interest me in this kind of discussion, which is the mechanisms. So what I'm going to try to do, I'm not going to do a review of the game. I'm not going to talk about components or thematics much, except to say that when I do one of these segments, it's going to be kind of a few observations about a game from the other side of the learning curve, from having pass over the learning curve and really come to understand the game. Maybe not in the depth that somebody who's got 10 or 20 plays has, but at least enough that I feel like I can comment comfortably about it. So today's Message from the Deep is going to be about the epic board game from Fantasy Flight Games, Star Wars Rebellion. Star Wars Rebellion is one of my favorite games. It's definitely in my top 20. I don't remember if it's in my top 10, but it's up there. It's an epic game in terms of scope and length. Every time I've played it, it took more than 4 hours, although I suspect with two players who are very familiar with the game, you could crack 4 hours pretty easily, and maybe even three, except for the one game where I was really stupid, which took about a half an hour. But that's a different kind of thing. So I want to talk about, there are five things in the game that I think are really clever and really do a lot to shape the way the game plays and give the game its feel. So without further ado, these are in just the order I thought of them, not in any particular ranking. But first I wanted to mention So the game has an interesting mechanism for moving its troops, which is activation of a system. Now, one of the designers of, or the lead designer, head designer, credited designer for Star Wars Rebellion is Corey Konietzka. Corey Konietzka is also one of the co-designers, or listed co-designers, for Twilight Imperium 4. Twilight Imperium 4 is Fantasy Flight's flagship epic space game, one that I played Twilight Imperium 3 once, and I really enjoyed it. At some point, I could see myself buying TI4, except that I can't imagine I'd ever play it, and if I did want to, I'm sure I could find someone else who has a copy, and if not, I could probably play Star Wars Rebellion and enjoy it just as much, and that's a game I have already. So, anyway. So Corey Konietzka, co-designer or person helping out with Twilight Imperium 4, it's not surprising then to see that mechanism moved over to Star Wars Rebellion. The way that it works in Star Wars Rebellion is that you activate a system by putting one of your leaders in it. You have a pool of leaders in the game. You start with 4. By the midpoint of the game, you have 8, and you have a maximum of 8. You can never have more than 8 leaders. And you use your leaders to do missions and to contest missions done by the other player and to activate your troops to do combat. So, in order to do that, you put your leader in a system, and then you send your troops into the system. You move ships from adjacent systems into the system where you put the leader. That's how ships get to move. That's how you activate movement. And then whenever Imperial ships and Rebellion ships are in the same system, then they have to have a battle. So what makes that interesting is the secondary rule, which is that you can never move ships out of an area where there is a leader. So why is this valuable? So this is a really interesting trick, because this is an interesting element because it keeps you from moving your ships all the way across the board. If you didn't have that secondary rule, you could put a leader in a system, move the ships in, then put a leader in the next system, move the ships in, and so on. But if you're not allowed to move ships out of a place where there's a leader, then you can't move them across the board in a speedy turn, with the exception of one card that I believe allows you to, although I think I need to go look that up. The other part of that that's really interesting is the accomplishing of missions. So you also use these leaders to do missions. The missions all will say resolve or attempt in a particular place. If you're resolving, there's no disputing it by the other player. Most of the resolve mission things are on the Imperial side. So like when the Imperial side wants to start a big project, the Rebellion can't stop them. They do resolve, but they have to put their leader somewhere particular. In the same way, the Rebel player has to put their leader somewhere. So the one thing you can do is try to foment support throughout the galaxy. When you foment support, then you get you're going to get manufacturing from those planets and so on. And that is an attempted thing which can be contested by the leader. So here's the part where the activation bit gets really interesting. Say that I have a planet with a couple troops on it and I really want to hold it. And my opponent has a bunch of, say I'm the Rebellion and I have a couple troops on a small planet. And the next system over, the Empire has a bunch of troops on a big planet. Well, one way that I can take advantage of that is I can do a really interesting slash critical slash important mission on the planet where the Imperial player has all his ships. So if I do it in that system, I'm using planet and system interchangeably here. If I do that in the system, then the Imperial player has to make a decision. If they oppose me and they put one of their leaders in the system too, to try to oppose what I've done, then they won't be able to move their troops out of that system. So they sometimes get stuck not opposing me on things where they maybe don't want me to do it. But in order to keep the mobility of their troops available. At the same time as the rebel player, you have to keep a bunch of leaders in reserve, and sometimes you end up not even using them because you need to be able to send them into combat and so you can have at least a fighting chance if the Empire sends their troops into combat. So that's the activation system, which I think is a really nice way to give and take various aspects of the power struggle on the board. The second message from the Deep that I really like about Star Wars Rebellion is the fact that different players have completely different win goals. The Rebellion player wins by taking pot shots at the Empire and surviving. The Empire player wins by destroying the Rebel base. So all the other stuff that you might do is all in service of that one action, destroy the Rebel base. Where the Rebels have a bunch of different things they can do, but ultimately they have to keep their Rebel base hidden. So it's a really interesting mechanism by which you're trying to do both things at the same time. And it makes for really fun play. Like, playing the Empire side is completely different than playing the Rebel side. But they're definitely related, and it's good to know what the other person's trying to do so you know where to put your energy. But it makes for a really interesting play. In a similar way to the competing win goals, the players have a really uneven start. The Rebel player gets maybe an eighth of the number of ships that the Imperial player plays. The Rebel player starts with 3 planets. The Imperial player starts with, like, 8. You have the same number of leaders, so you're going to get to do the same number of actions each turn. So from that perspective, the Rebel player has a lot of room. But the game also has information is on the Imperial side in terms of the Rebel player pretty much always acts first. So at the beginning of the game, the Rebel player puts their troops down first, which means that if you concentrate your ships too much in one place, the Imperial player will just put their biggest concentration of ships right next door and blow up all your stuff right away, which can makes for a really dramatic first turn and really sets the Rebel on their back feet. I think the uneven start means the Rebel player game is a little bit less forgiving of mistakes, but generally the game runs on a pretty good knife edge. I've never, except for the one game where I played, just made just a really bad error at the beginning, putting my Rebel base too close to an Imperial base. Basically, every game of this I've played has been on a knife edge down to one or two turns. So the uneven start really makes for an interesting game. It means that if you've played the Imperial side, you've played Star Wars Rebellion, but you have never, there's a whole other game you haven't played, which is the Rebel side. You know, in a big epic game like this, I really like that there is some uncertainty. You know, when you have opposed missions, the dramatic tension of opposing those by rolling dice is really interesting because the dice are super swingy. The dice that you roll have, I think, half the sides are blank, or maybe a third of them are blank. But it's really easy to... We definitely had contested battles where one person came in with 5 dice and the other person came in with 2 or 3, and the person with 2 or 3 won. Just by a combination of lucky rolls. It doesn't happen every time. Statistically, it comes down on the side of the person with the better dice. But it's swingy enough that you have these dramatic moments. That's part of what makes an epic game like this epic, are these stand-up moments, these moments of dramatic dice rolling. One of the things that's really interesting is one of the end conditions, or what ends up being the end condition, even if it isn't intended, is the Rebels, if they blow up the Death Star, they don't win the game, but they gain 2 reputation points, which goes a long way toward winning. The Empire only wins by blowing up the Rebel base. So what's interesting is that the 2 different sides have different outcomes in terms of what they're trying to do. The Rebel side, they can attempt to do a trench run on the Death Star, but it's a dice roll. They have to get a pretty good dice roll to do it, so they're not always going to make it. By contrast, if the Empire is going to blow up their planet, they just have to have the pieces in place. So actually, that's how our game ended. I hadn't yet found the Death Star plans cards, so we ended up having an interesting battle between the two factions. My entire space fleet was wiped out, and little did I know but then his entire land fleet was wiped out, so he was unable to land and destroy the base. But then on his next turn, he used the super laser and blew up the planet. So, you know, my opponent won. But it doesn't always work out that way. And because by the time you get to that kind of face-off, it's pretty close to losing, or pretty close to the end of the game, usually 2 points in the Rebels' favor will swing the game to the Rebels. And so it often ends up being the win or loss condition, which can be really fun. But the fact that the Rebels have to roll dice and take this chance and get lucky in order to blow up the Death Star versus the Death Star is just this mechanical, technocratic, I play a card, I blow up your planet thing. I think that's really cool, and it fits the nature of the game really well. I like it a lot. So finally, the last thing that I'll say that I really like about Star Wars Rebellion, and this is obvious, I think, in all the other things, is there's a lot of bluffing that goes on. There are all these different missions you can send your leaders on. Some of them interact strongly with the other people. Some of them just advance your own agenda. But there's often hidden information that's a key part of playing the game. And you have to try to figure out where the other person's going. And there's a lot of mind games involved. So from that perspective, it's pretty fun. As a hidden information game. So there are five messages from a deep dive on Star Wars Rebellion. So if you haven't had a chance to try it yet and you know someone who has it, I would recommend. I have not tried the four-player version. There's a four-player version where each player is one of two people on one of the sides, and there's a kind of artificial division of labor that happens, but it's not really necessary. Like, I don't see it being real fun to play four players, but I think if you had a good group and you were enthusiastic, then getting to plan your maneuvers with somebody else could be a lot of fun as well. So I could see it being fun if you had the right group, but as a 1v1 game, it's really good. So give that a try. Do you enjoy Star Wars Rebellion? Are there other big epic games of this nature that you think I should try instead, other than Twilight Imperium, which I have tried? I'd be interested to hear it in the comments. Hop over to our guild on Board Game Geek. That's Guild 3269. Or if you Google Pick Up and Deliver Podcast Guild, you can find it that way pretty easily. Well, thanks for listening. My name is Brendan Riley. Reach out and drop me a line on Board Game Geek or on Twitter at Rattlebox Games or wherever else you can find this podcast. If you like it and you'd like to help more people find it, please do consider writing us a review. Positive reviews are better in terms of our ability for other people to find us, but honesty is the best, I think. So thanks so much for listening, and I hope that your next walk is as pleasant as mine has been. Take care. Bye.
Brought to you by Rattlebox Games.